The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. An empire strikes back. Germany and the Greek crisis. That's the title of George Friedman's latest piece at Stratford, July 14th. The German Empire is back. Now, over the last half century or so, Germany has used the Union of Nations in Europe as a cloak for its ambitious aims. As German foreign policy one official said to the New York Times, this was back in May, I think I quoted from this a couple of weeks ago, he said, we have to get used to assuming more leadership and be aware of how reluctant others are to have Germany lead. So we have to do it through the EU. We know others are reluctant for us to take charge. So we have to conceal our true intentions. That's what he said in May. Well, this Greek Euro crisis has blown Germany's cover. Over the past week, we've seen the clearest, most naked display of German aggression since the end of World War II. That's the truth. The cloak has been removed. They've taken off the cloak. And now their true intentions, their ambitious aims, they're out there for everyone to see. You know all about the Greek crisis that's been in the news this past week or so. On Sunday, of course, the Greek people spoke up loudly, clearly, and they said, we want our freedom. We don't want to be controlled by Germany. And on Monday, Germany just disregarded the will of the people. Germany ignored the referendum and unilaterally imposed its will on the Greek government. As the EU Observer noted, it said, Monday, July 13th will go down in history as the day Greece lost its independence after 185 years of freedom. The day democracy died in the country that invented it. Monday, July 13th. It'll go down in history as the day Greece lost its independence. Now, it doesn't matter what side of the political equation that you're on, whether from the right or the left. All of them are speaking up. At least in Europe, it's still surprising to see just how, for the most part, the reaction among commentators here in the States is that, well, Europe's falling apart. But commentators in Europe are taking note of what's happening, both on the left and on the right. They see that it's the EU, the German-led EU, that now controls Greece. It's the German-led EU that has veto power over Greek laws. It's the German-led EU that's taking some 50 billion euros worth of assets from Greece. It's the German-led EU that's forcing reform in the pension laws, the tax laws. Now, as I said the other day, you could argue that some of these laws or rules or restrictions that are being imposed upon Greece, you could argue that Greece deserves this harsh treatment. But you cannot argue, as that EU Observer piece notes, you cannot argue that Greece is still a sovereign state. It's not. Not anymore. Let me just play to you a clip from Nigel Farage, the UK politician and commentator, This is from, I think it was at the EU in Brussels, last week, July the 8th.
And the old enmities have been resumed. Just listen to the way that the German leader of the Christian Democrat group this morning attacked Mr. Spiras. I think it was absolutely disgusting, but it shows the way North and South now feel about each other. Mr. Tsipras, your country should never have joined the euro. I think you acknowledge that. But the big banks, the big businesses and big politics forced you in. Goldman Sachs, the German arms manufacturers, they were all very happy. And when the bailouts began, they weren't for the Greek people. Those bailouts were to bail out French, German and Italian banks. They haven't helped you at all. And these years of austerity, these years of high unemployment, of increasing poverty, none of it's worked. In fact, your debt-GDP ratio has gone from 100% at the start of the crisis to 180% right now. It would be madness, sir, to continue on this course. You have been very brave. You called that referendum when one of your predecessors tried to do the same. The bully boys of Brussels had him removed. They tried their best again. Mr. Juncker said you would have to leave the euro and leave the European Union. Even Mr. Schulz, the president of the parliament, who one would have thought might be neutral, said that if the Greeks voted no, their power supplies may even go down. There were threats and bullying, but the Greeks stood firm. But, sir, you cannot have your cake and eat it. They will give you no more, these people. They can't afford to. If they give you more, they'll have to give other Eurozone members more. So your moment has come. And frankly, if you've got the courage, you should lead the Greek people out of the Eurozone with your head held high. Get back your democracy. Get back control of your country. Give your people the leadership and the hope that they crave.
That was Nigel Farage just last week pleading for Greece to pull out of the Eurozone, to preserve its sovereignty, to hold on to its freedoms. That was just a couple of days before the referendum. He applauded Tsipras for calling for that referendum. It happened on Sunday. And yet, look at the pressure that was put upon the Greek government. Just the day after that referendum. Now the bailout deal has been implemented as of yesterday. And then there's reports, there's pictures coming out of Greece going up in flames. Protesters crying out, why didn't our government listen to us? Why did it submit to Germany's demands? I mentioned that column the other day by Boris Johnson, the London mayor. He, too, was just beside himself. Couldn't believe it. He told Greece, get out. What right does Germany have to just go in there and basically to seize the assets? In George Friedman's piece, I mentioned the title at the start there. He summed up the deal between Greece and Germany this way. The specifics are less important than the fact that Greece invoked its sovereign right and Germany responded by enforcing an agreement that compelled the Greeks to cede those rights. Greece invoked its sovereign right and Germany took them away. Friedman says it was not the government's position that troubled Germany the most, but the Greek referendum. It was the will of the people. They didn't like the way the Greek people rose up against Germany. And so they crushed the rebellion. Friedman called it an attack on Greece's national sovereignty. And you notice in his article, he labels Germany as the attacker, not the EU, not Brussels. The Germans could not accommodate the vote, he said. They had to respond by demanding concessions on Greek sovereignty. Look at how Greece is being treated. Now again, as I said, they've made their mistakes. And they've got a lot of politicians like so many other nations that are out there recklessly spending on all these social programs. But still, step back for a moment and see what's happening in the heart of Europe. These are liberal democracies we're talking about. Or they're at least they're supposed to be. Ambrose Evans Pritchard, he wrote the other day, Greece is being treated like a hostile, occupied state. That's how they're being treated. The cruel capitulation forced upon Greece after 31 hours on the diplomatic rack offers no conceivable way out of the country's perpetual crisis. It says the terms are harsher by a full order of magnitude than those rejected by Greek voters in a landslide referendum a week ago, and therefore can never command democratic assent. It's even harsher than it was a few weeks back. Wolfgang Munchau, he wrote in the Financial Times in Britain, he said they demoted the Eurozone into a toxic fixed exchange rate system with a shared single currency run in the interests of Germany, held together by the threat of absolute destitution for those who challenge the prevailing order. The best thing that can be said of the weekend is the brutal honesty of those perpetrating this regime change. But it was not just the brutality that stood out, nor even the total capitulation of Greece. The material shift is that Germany has formally proposed an exit mechanism. This was the real coup over the weekend. Not only regime change in Greece, but also regime change in the Eurozone. The cloak, you see, has been removed. It says any other country that in future might challenge German economic orthodoxy will face similar problems. You see, Germany had to make an example of Greece because the future of Europe is on the line here. Germany's preeminent position as the head of Europe, or the king of Europe, as it's called in Daniel 11, the king of the north, just like I pointed out yesterday with respect to the king of the south. Germany is king. That is for sure. Back to that Friedman article. It says the Germans have long been visible as the controlling entity of the European Union. I mean, that's no secret. If you've read The Trumpet for any number of years, you know that the Germans have long been visible as the controlling entity here. But they've been careful to avoid the appearance of being too dominant, too much in control. They've used the EU as a cloak for German ambition, as Bernard Connolly wrote years ago. Back to Friedman, it says, the Germans have long been visible as the controlling entity of the European Union. This time, they made no bones about it, nor did they make any bones about their ferocity. It's a strong article. In effect, they raised the banner of German primacy, German national interest, and German willingness to crush the opposition. Ferocity, crush. These are Friedman's words, not The Trumpet. George Friedman at the highly respected Stratfor. The French and the Italians, among others, questioned the German position publicly. In the end, it didn't matter. The Germans consulted with these other governments, but Berlin decided the negotiating position because in the end, it was Germany that would be most exposed by French or Italian moderation. This negotiation was in the context of the European Union, but it was a German negotiation. It was in the context of the European Union, but that was just sort of a formality. This was, in fact, a German negotiation. Friedman says, and with this, the Germans did something they never wanted to do, resurrect fairly, unambiguously, the idea that Germany is the sovereign and dominant nation state in Europe, and that it has the power and the will to unilaterally impose its will on another nation. Well, at least here's one commentator in the United States that sees what's going on. Why don't many others see this? They are waking to this fact in Europe, though, for sure. It says, in making these moves, Germany crossed two lines. The lesser line was that France and Germany were not linked on dealing with Greece, though they were not so far apart as to be even close to a breach. The second and more serious line was that the final negotiation was an exercise of unilateral German power. The Germans made an example of Cyprus, and now Greece. The leading power of Europe will not underwrite defaulting debtors. It will demand political submission for what help is given. This is not a message that will be lost in Europe, whatever the anti-Greek feeling is now. See, that's the larger point to make of all of this. The other nations in the Eurozone, the other nations in Europe, they see what's happened here. It's not lost on the others. Germany had to make an example of Greece. Germany had to do this because of bigger confrontations down the road. It's either Germany's way or the highway. Now, we've long predicted, based upon the sure word of Bible prophecy, that Europe is headed for a smaller, more integrated group of nations dominated by Germany. We've got to see that the nature of this European combine, it's changing dramatically. It's becoming much more radical. It's certainly not democratic. I mean, there is some outrage, selective outrage, I suppose, around the world about the harshness of Germany or Angela Merkel over this past week. But look, within Germany, the spirit is changing. There's quite a few Germans that wanted her to be stronger even more harsh. In fact, the German finance minister, he came out and publicly broke with Merkel over the bailouts just this past week. He wanted Greece booted out of the euro. I think I saw a clip the other day, too. Carl zu Guttenberg, Theodore zu Guttenberg, he expressed a similar sentiment. Kick him out. Well, they're still in, hanging by a thread. But how long will this last? How long will this large group of nations, how long will it stay together before Germany takes swift and decisive action to downsize it and to make sure that all 10 are on board? That's what the Bible prophesies. Again, in Daniel 11, that verse I read yesterday, verse 40, it says, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind." See, there's a king in the north. There's a dominant nation that's controlling this prophesied 10-nation European superstate. It's dominated by Germany. And the euro crisis is helping to remove the cloak. It's a crisis, as we've said repeatedly, that Germany planned and prepared for from the beginning. They knew what would happen. Now, 50, 60 years ago, again, it's easy to say this today when even commentators are beginning to wake up to what's happening. But when you see what's happening, that's what makes these quotes that I play to you from Herbert Armstrong just so astonishing at how much he saw back in the 1950s. Well, he saw it because he looked into the sure word of God, Bible prophecy. Let me just play you a clip from one of his old radio programs about what he said would emerge out of the heart of Europe and who would be the dominant nation. This is Herbert Armstrong from his old radio program.
And some of us, my friends, know not only what we see when we're over there, but we know also what is prophesied. And we know what is prophesied to rise up in Europe. And we know which is the one and the only nation in Europe that is capable of dominating, and which is the economic and the industrial heart of all Europe, without which there could be no stability and strength. A human body cannot live without its heart. And the economic and the military body that is to rise up and to restore the Roman Empire, the thing that we least suspect here in the United States, it cannot rise up without its heart. And its heart is in Germany.
Its heart is in Germany. All throughout his 50-year ministry, Mr. Armstrong, his writers at the Plain Truth, those serving on his editorial staff, they pointed to this signature prophecy about this inevitable rise of a German-dominated European Federation of Nations. Mr. Armstrong was talking about it, as I said the other day, even before the outbreak of World War II. He was talking about it all during World War II. And incredibly, he was sounding the alarm in the days that followed World War II, after Germany had been smashed. There are those, by the way, who, when criticizing Miss Merkel and just the harshness of Germany, that have reminded Germany of the not-so-recent, well, it is fairly recent, I guess, if you look at the big picture, the help that the West provided Germany in the years that followed World War II, the rebuilding that was sponsored by the United States. Look at the massive debt relief Germany was given, leaving some to wonder today, well, what about little Greece? What about helping Greece? What about helping one of your neighbors? What about listening to the will of the Greece people or the Greek people? In any event, here's Germany crushed after World War II. And Mr. Armstrong there, sounding the alarm about the reemergence of a German-dominated European combine, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Mr. Armstrong said in 1950, the world will be stunned, dumbfounded, to see Germany emerge suddenly in a power never equaled by Hitler, by a union of 10 nations in Europe, probably including some at present, puppets of Russia, in a gigantic United States of Europe. It says, soon the United States of Europe will emerge with Germany at its head. He said that in 1950. He said that some of those Soviet satellites at the time would end up inside that European combine. Now, that's happened, okay? That's happened. How could he be so bold as to say something that seemed so far-fetched at the time? Imagine someone listening in 1950. Germany's still digging out of the rubble. And you have this massive Iron Curtain all across Europe. Well, those puppets of Russia, are now part of the EU. How about that? We don't yet see that union of 10 nations. It hasn't yet been downsized. But that's coming. Notice this. This is something that came out just yesterday. GermanForeignPolicy.com talking about this deal between Germany and Greece. It wouldn't even be right to call it a deal, really. But this report says, in several Western and Southern European countries, the agreement on Greece reached in Brussels signals a looming collapse of the continental post-war order and Germany's revival as an ostentatious dictatorial power. This is a report coming out of Germany, GermanForeignPolicy.com. It says, whereas social democratic observers do not exclude an attenuation of the contradictions, Southern European conservative media are among those who speak of a revival of German hegemonic ambitions, which had largely determined or triggered the First and Second World Wars. It says the consequences of the French-Italian submission during negotiations in Brussels are generating those fears because Paris had not succeeded to, and Rome had not even seriously attempted to thwart the German dictates of sovereignty over Greece. See, this is the bigger story here. It's not so much that Greece was brought into submission. It's that France and Italy were brought into submission. It's that France and Italy, they were not about to challenge German hegemony. It says both Italy and France are aware of the dangers of becoming the next victim of German financial dictatorship. Let me just read that to you again. Both Italy and France are aware of the dangers of becoming the next victim of German financial dictatorship. Notice this. This is how it concludes this report from GermanForeignPolicy.com. It says they're competing for admission in a Northern European core Europe. So this is Italy and France now. They are competing for admission in a Northern European core Europe whose membership will be decided by Berlin in the case of a possible collapse of the European Union. Now, that's pretty much dead on. Those that talk about Europe disintegrating or collapsing, I mean, they're half right. But the core that emerges out of this, well, then you go right back to what Mr. Armstrong said. This union of 10 nations or kings, 10 regions in the continent, this United States of Europe, Germany is deciding who will be members of that exclusive club. Germany is determining the rules. Germany's establishing the precedent. Germany had to make an example out of Greece. Germany decided Greece's fate. And France and Italy went right along. They did not challenge it one bit. They're aware of the dangers of becoming the next victim of this dictatorship. Now, I read to you the other day, this is Revelation 17, and verse 8, says, the beast that you saw was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wander, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they beheld the beast that was and is not and yet is. So as I pointed out, Mr. Armstrong was on the scene for that sixth resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, which is why this verse is worded the way it is. Because he alone, he was the only one who understood this prophecy and boldly proclaimed the truth of these many prophecies in Revelation 17 and 13, Daniel 2 and 7. He was on the scene. And then after that head was crushed, after that sixth resurrection was over, it went underground, this movement, this Nazi spirit. Verse 10 says, and there are seven kings, five are fallen and one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. So there would be one final resurrection to come on the scene after Mr. Armstrong's work, after Mr. Armstrong's life. And it would continue for a short time. It would explode onto the scene, like he explained in so many of his articles, that people would be shocked by the sudden emergence of this world power, this superpower. Daniel 2 talks about it being a mixture of iron and miry clay. You can see why there's so much division and so many, as Farage brought out, so many old hostilities that are reemerging. Of course the Greeks are interested primarily in Greek interests. And the Germans too. That's just human nature. But it's prophesied to come together for a short space. And it's going to have all of the iron it needs from that old Roman system to smash nations on this earth. Read Daniel 11 and verse 40 again. When that king of the north comes against the king of the south, it's just going to crush that radical movement, radical Islam. He continues a short space. Verse 12 says, and the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings, 1 hour with the beast. This is talking about the United States of Europe. This is what Mr. Armstrong was referring to. 10 heads of state in Europe joining together for 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. And so for this short space, I mean, there will be a tremendous show of unity. There's one dominant mind. There's one dominant nation. There's one dominant ruler that's going to emerge out of that nation, as Daniel 8 prophesies. And all the other kings, they're going to give their power and their strength to that beast. This is where the EU is headed. I mean, that German foreign policy piece pretty much hit the nail on the head. They're competing for admission into a Northern European core. Well, I don't know if they're all going to be in what would be called the North. But there will be 10 regions that come together. The membership will be decided by Berlin, as GermanForeignPolicy.com points out. You can expect a collapse or a partial collapse of this union of nations in Europe. But look, precedent is being established. Rules are being set up, very undemocratic rules at that, as Germany prepares for this inevitable reality. I mean, it's coming. It's prophesied. And verse 14 shows how it leads to, finally, it leads to this war between the nations of men and the Lamb, who shall overcome them, as it says there in verse 14. For he is the Lord of lords and King of kings, and those with him are called and chosen and faithful. There are the few, the saints of God, the bride of Christ, that will be right there with him, alongside of him. Those that were doing a work for God in these terrifying last days of man's rule on this earth. You think about just how far-fetched it might have seemed back in 1950 to hear Herbert Armstrong talking about a power coming out of Europe even greater than what Hitler had in the 1940s. But even just 5 or 10 years ago, let's say 10 years ago, who could have imagined Germany unilaterally and aggressively transforming a fellow European power into basically a vassal state? Who could have imagined this? Well, we could have. We did, in fact. My father's talked about this in booklet after booklet, in article after article. In his booklet, The Rising Beast, he says it will not be long before Europe is reunited as the Holy Roman Empire. It will be led very assertively by Germany. Very assertively, he said. Many years ago, that booklet, The Rising Beast, by the way, it talked about Germany working behind the scenes during the 1990s with the Yugoslavia nightmare, the splitting apart of that nation. My father wrote, this was in 2011, a few years ago, he said, in May 2010, Germany was forced to bail out Greece's economy. Last November, it rescued Ireland. Other European countries are in the same mess, such as Spain, Italy, and Portugal. The economies of these nations and the future of the entire European unification project are on life support. And Germany's fingers are on the power switch. See, Germany's in the driver's seat. Germany's orchestrated all of this, even the crises. My father said, watch closely. This is back in 2011. He said, watch closely. Germany will use this crisis to force Europe to unite more tightly. You see, it's either Germany's way or the highway. In the process, some Eurozone countries will be forced out of the Union. When that happens, the pundits will say the European unification is dead. The European Union has failed. Don't listen to them, my father said. Don't listen to them. Every country that leaves the EU puts us one step closer to seeing the German-led 10-nation European superstate. It's all prophesied. It's all prophesied in your Bible. Later that same year, my father wrote, Germany has the economic might and the political will to do what it feels must be done and nobody else does. See, we just read that from GermanForeignPolicy.com. Not France, not Italy, no one. He said, whoever controls the money controls the empire. So a stronger political union's coming. A stronger military union is coming. You may have seen an article just the other day by Richard Palmer about the German military and about how it's now being invited in to places like Poland, something, again, that you couldn't have imagined just a few years ago, a few decades ago. My father warned, back at the start of this Greece crisis, he said, how the Germans are dealing with the economic crisis is far from democratic. Those nations that can't or won't comply will be kicked out of the European Union. So as I say, we've been telling you this. And it's exactly what we've witnessed over the past week. This is one of the most significant moments ever, my father said, in the history of Europe. We have reached quite a turning point. This is of great significance, what we're witnessing. We'll certainly continue covering it closely because it's so significant from a prophetic standpoint. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial, right here in Edmond, Oklahoma, central Oklahoma. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The indescribable wreckage of the Second World War left hundreds of thousands of civilians in Germany wandering around helplessly, hungry and homeless. Every major city in Germany was buried under a heap of ruin. Adding insult to these devastating injuries, the United States and Britain jointly stated, "It is our inflexible purpose to destroy German militarism and Nazism, and to ensure that Germany will never again be able to disturb the peace of the world." Germany had just received one of the worst beatings ever in the history of modern warfare. Its military might had been destroyed, its infrastructure crushed. Against this backdrop, even as Roosevelt and Churchill offered assurances that German militarism had been permanently dismantled, Herbert W. Armstrong warned of a prophesied revival of German might to be fulfilled in the latter days. "From the very start of World War II," Mr. Armstrong wrote on May 9, 1945, "they have considered the possibility of losing this second round as they did the first, and they have carefully, methodically planned, in such eventuality, the third round, World War III." Few could have taken this warning seriously in 1945. Yet today, as Stratford noted in 2010, Germany has become one of the richest, most technologically and industrially advanced states in human history. Just as God said it would be, Germany has risen from the ashes of worldwide war to become the largest, wealthiest, and most powerful state in Europe. It is the beating heart of a revived Holy Roman Empire. For more information about the prophetic rise of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, request our free reprint article, "The Holy Roman Empire is Back."
The Trumpet Daily.
We'll still have problems with Iran's sponsorship of terrorism, its funding of proxies like Hezbollah that threaten Israel and threaten the region, the destabilizing activities that they're engaging in, including in places like Yemen. And my hope is that building on this deal, we can continue to have conversations with Iran that incentivize them to behave differently in the region, to be less aggressive, less hostile, more cooperative, to operate the way we expect nations in the international community to behave. But we're not counting on it. So this deal is not contingent on Iran changing its behavior. It's not contingent on Iran suddenly operating like a liberal democracy. It solves one particular problem, which is making sure they don't have a bomb.
That's a comment from President Obama yesterday. A revealing remark, for sure. "We hope they'll change, but we're not counting on it. We hope they'll change their behavior, but we're not counting on it." The one thing, though, that we got out of this deal, these negotiations, is that they won't be able to make a bomb. And in fact, as we wrote at thetrumpet.com yesterday, this deal guarantees that they'll get a nuclear bomb. But even leaving that aside, look at the behavior. Look at what they're doing. Two generals at the Pentagon just recently stated that they're responsible for Iranian weapons provided by Iran in Iraq, that Iranian weapons are directly, not indirectly, directly responsible for the deaths of 500 American soldiers. That's just in recent years. Now what happens when all of these sanctions are lifted and Iran receives billions of dollars? Again, we're hoping they might change, but we're not counting on it. it doesn't sound like he's very hopeful that there will be any lasting change. General Martin Dempsey, he said, and it's been reported too, that the Pentagon is upset, or at least many in the Pentagon is upset over this deal. General Dempsey said, make no mistake about it, there are at least five other malign activities in which Iran is engaged that cause me grave security concerns. Ballistic missiles, sea-based mines, cyber activities, arms trafficking, and surrogates and proxies. These five areas, it gives him great concern. And now the pathway is there for them to build a bomb. There won't be 24-hour-per-day inspections. There certainly won't be. Let me just play to you what Prime Minister Netanyahu said yesterday. I played a clip from him yesterday as well. This is something that he said, I believe, in an interview with NBC News.
I'm making a special appeal to everyone who is concerned with the future of our world, because I think that Iran is different. It is a zealot country. It's a country that is governed by a group that believes in militant Islamic fundamentalism. It has killed a lot of Americans. It's killing everybody in sight in the Middle East. It's in Yemen. It's around our borders. It's got a terror network that encompasses now 30 countries. It's curious that in this agreement, the head of this terrorist arm, some of the sanctions are removed from the head of the terrorist force that propels this terrorism around the world. I think this is a big mistake. And I think that Iran has here two paths to the bomb. One is if they keep the deal, and the other is if they cheat on the deal. They can cheat on the deal because the inspections are not instantaneous anywhere, anytime, as Foreign Minister of Iran Zarif said correctly. In fact, you don't have them inspections within 24 hours. You have 24 days before you can inspect any site that you find suspicious in Iran. 24 days. Can you imagine giving a drug dealer 24 days notice before you check the premises?
It's common sense. The left-wing media in Israel is just lambasting the prime minister. Stop with these alarming messages or responses to Iran. That's what Haaretz printed today, an editorial in Haaretz, an Israeli paper, chastising the prime minister for warning not just Israel, but the world. As he said in that interview on NBC, look, this is a danger for the United States as well. It has two courses it can take here. It can just play out the deal over the next 12, 15 years and then get a bomb with the support of the international community. Or it can cheat. It can cheat by lying and deceiving, which is why it was so important for them to win on this point of the inspections. Imagine that, 24 days before the inspectors could even get in there. Not today, not unannounced, certainly not. But an application process. 24 days before they can get in and check the premises. As Netanyahu said later in that interview, think about how many, using the drug dealer analogy, think about how much drugs can be flushed down the toilet. If the inspectors couldn't get in there for a full 24 days. This, as some are now writing, this is worse than Munich. Much worse, as it said at Commentary Magazine yesterday. This column by Rick Richman. He said, if one peruses the pages of the New York Times from mid-September 1938 through the first week of October 1938, it is apparent that what we are witnessing today is a virtual replay of those 3 weeks, only worse. It's worse today. He says later, what we're living through now is much worse than Munich, not only because we're ignoring the lesson learned from that event at the cost of a 6-year world war and millions of deaths, but because even Chamberlain would be shocked at what is transpiring again. Even Chamberlain would be shocked by the terms of this agreement. Chamberlain implemented what was, at the time, a mainstream theory of international relations that appeasing a dictatorship with respect to its colorable claims could limit its ultimate aims. But at least Chamberlain did not pay Hitler a huge amount of money for signing the agreement. At least Chamberlain didn't give Hitler $150 billion. He says at least he did not finance Hitler's regime at home and his plans abroad. At least he did not publicly assure him that he could be a very successful regional player. At least he did not proceed without a parliamentary majority. At least he did not adopt a constitutionally suspect procedure enabling him to prevail with a 1/3 partisan minority. At least he did not assure his fellow citizens they could rest assured it was a good deal because it would have his name on it. At least he did not negotiate a time-limited agreement and acknowledged it would put Germany in a position to prevail at the end of the agreement. It says in the past 2 weeks, Iran increased its demands while holding out the possibility of a new era once the agreement was signed. The moderate, quote-unquote, Iranian president marched with huge crowds behind him holding signs reading death to America and death to Israel, with the pictures flashed throughout the world, with the world hookup of the internet. He says after an exhausting 17 days of negotiations with deadlines, quote-unquote, serially ignored by Iran, and seriatim U.S. concessions escalating as they went along, the president and the secretary of state made an end of the whole business by accepting virtually all of Iran's demands while paving the path toward its ultimate goal. We capitulated. We surrendered. We gave in to virtually all of their demands. As he says here, this is much worse than Munich. Finally, it says, in 1938, there was Winston Churchill's prophetic eloquence and Alfred Duff Cooper's principled resignation, but they were insufficient to stop the biggest disaster of the 20th century. That's what that was back in Munich, the biggest disaster of the 20th century. Now we're in the 21st century. It says, in the United States, 77 years later, Congress will have not 1 week, but 60 days to review what is worse than Munich. It's more than enough time to understand the pending disaster. But because of the procedure the president has adopted, that's talking about the reverse of the Constitution, turning the Constitution on its head, as I spoke about yesterday. But because of the procedure the president has adopted, the question is not what the majority of the Congress thinks, but what 1/3 of it does. We're about to find out if there are any senators and representatives in today's Democratic Party comparable to Churchill or Cooper. We'll see. We'll see. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream is available at kpcg.fm. Send us your feedback to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for listening today. We'll see you tomorrow.